Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Y'all also very much for joining us here today on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the hockey fanatic himself, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here on a windy day.
With his Dallas Stars shirt on. He's coming. It's always hockey.
The season is almost over. We only got like 16 games left. I'm so ready for the playoffs. It's going to be amazing. I feel bad for my brothers up north because the Canadians lost to the Americans again. This time in the Special Olympics.
The Paralympics. Hockey. No, the Paralympics.
Paralympics.
Because they play in that cool-ass sled that they set on.
Yeah, that looks cool.
Would you, if you were offered to go play just to give it a whirl, would you like to try that?
100%.
Because it looks cool, don't it?
100%.
And they slam into it. Man, those guys get after it. Yeah, so congratulations to the American team.
Yeah.
Another gold medal. Clean, see, I can't see clean, too good. Is that a sweep?
It's a clean sweep. Yeah, man, the wind. I hate the wind. Like, it's
wind's number one, the weather that I dislike the most is the wind. Number two is snow.
I mean, I'm okay with rain. I'm okay with fog. I'm okay with snow.
I like how he says fog.
I'm okay with dry heat. All of it's fine. Wind is annoying unless I'm trying to fly a kite.
That's
unless
true.
I'm a sailor trying to get somewhere quickly.
That's true.
Or unless I'm trying to disperse cremated loved ones.
Yeah.
I don't like wind.
Like the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing that I don't like.
I was joking with you today. I go, hey, are you shooting your bow today?
Yeah, that's it. No, I'm playing disc golf. I don't mind a breeze. Don't get me wrong. I don't like this 30-mile-an-hour wind we got whipping as it blows this damn cold front in.
And the sand and the pollen.
And you can see it. You can hear it in our voices. It's great. We love living down here where the environment we live in tries to kill you every day. It's a lot of fun. It's great.
Yeah, tornado season's just around the corner.
Heck yeah. Always fun. Hope everybody is doing great. It's had a great week. Everything's going well. You've got some good food. You got some good plans coming up.
Spring break for a lot of people.
Oh, a bunch of y'all are all spring breaking.
Luke's off and he's pumped.
Is he fired up?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he don't have to get up and go to school anymore because he's bored with it.
I mean, I could hear pizza cooking last night at like 3 in the morning. I'm like, what is going on? I go in the kitchen.
It's like a college dorm in your kitchen at 3 in the morning. You're like, what are you doing?
I got a text message from today. We're out of chicken nuggets. We're out of hot dogs. We're out of hot dog buns.
Oh, great.
That means you get them on the way home.
That's exactly like, what that means.
Because you're up all night.
Yeah. You're like, stop. Stop it already. But I remember spring break. That used to be fun. Of course, we never really went
anywhere. We always went skiing.
Or we would go to the lake. We would always go to the lake like we were getting the boats and stuff ready. Everything was getting ready so you could be ready to go out to fish or do whatever. Or you're getting fired up and getting your stuff ready for turkey season to kick off here. So that's a whole nother thing, too. But speaking of hunting season, folks, I've got a story to share with you and Mr. Filson. Get a load of this. I'm a rancher in Oklahoma. And feral hogs are a constant problem out here. I live north of the Red River on the Oklahoma side, not far from West Cache Creek. And one night, A friend called and asked if I'd wanted to go pig hunting with him on a field belonging to one of his friends.
Heck yeah, I do.
That's the answer, folks. The answer to killing pigs is always yes. So the pigs had been tearing the place up pretty badly, and around here, hunting hogs and coyotes with thermal scopes is legal. And since feral pigs are mostly active at night, that's when we went out. It's the most fun. It is the most fun. In the dark, creeping death, they don't know you're there, and you can take your revenge on them. I enjoy that. So it goes on to say that we rode in by the river, then got off and walked maybe 150 yards before setting up behind a fallen log. So we just sat there quietly and waited. It was one of those beautiful, calm nights where the moonlight alone gave you good visibility even without the thermal scope. Well, after about a half an hour, we heard a scream. It was loud and sharp and unnatural enough to make both of us look around and look at each other immediately. Now, my first thought was a cougar. Not the old gals. Listen, we're talking about cats, all right? It was like, hey, boss. No, it's not that kind of kiss. But I couldn't tell exactly where the sound had came from. So then, off to our right, I heard a pig squeal. So I figured some large predator had gotten hold of it, maybe a cat. So I brought my thermal scope up and looked. This was the moment that I froze. Standing there was a creature that looked to be at least 8 to 10 feet tall. It was holding a hog in its hands.
Yeah.
It's just moving. Anyway, this was not some small pig either. I'd estimate it weighed between 200 and 250 pounds. It was squealing and fighting and thrashing as hard as it could. The sheer strength and size of whatever was holding it was beyond anything I had ever seen. The creature had a long beard and dog-like snout and a hairy body. Through the thermal, everything showed up in white, so I couldn't make out the actual color. But the form was clear enough. Then I watched it do something I will never forget. It literally ripped that hog in half with its bare hands, like it was tearing a sheet of paper. Then it threw the remains to the ground. A second later, it turned and started walking towards us. Well, I nearly lost it right there. I was terrified. I froze completely. I couldn't even pull the trigger. In my head, I kept telling myself, fire! But my body would not respond. It was like the signal from my brain never reached my hand. Then, out of nowhere, a massive log flew over the top of us. It had to be about 30 foot long and maybe 2 to 3 foot thick. This thing, or the thing, came over us with enough force to make it clear that if it had hit us, we would have been finished. Well, that's what snapped me out of it. I jumped up and ran. My buddy was right behind me. We made it to my ATV and started it, and I pinned the throttle. We were probably doing around 60 racing down the roads. This ATV will run about 80, and I don't think I've ever even hit top speed yet. We caught the pasture gate, and I never even considered stopping to open it. We crashed straight into it. Then we hit a ditch and went airborne. And I remember thinking, we're about to flip end over end, and this is probably going to be bad. The next thing I knew, we're sitting still. We're not moving. We're not hurt. We're somehow next to my truck and trailer. And I still can't explain this. We loaded up in silence and drove to my friend's house without saying a word. When we got there, we went inside, and his wife took one look at us and asked, what's wrong? She said we looked like we'd seen a ghost, and then she said, well, where are your guns? That's when we realized we had left them behind by the stump where we had been sitting. I told her that whatever was out there could just keep those guns. I didn't care. I was just glad to be gone. Now, I live about 40 miles from my friend, and what happened next is still the creepiest part of all of it. When I got home and parked the truck, I started walking toward my front door, and I noticed something lying in my yard about 20 yards from my house. So I walked over to it. It was my rifle, the same rifle that I had left down by the river. So this thing knew where I lived. I have no idea how, and I have no explanation for how a rifle that had been left behind out there ended up in my yard 40 miles away. Nothing like this has happened since, but I don't go out after dark unless I absolutely have to. I haven't been back to that creek or that stretch of river, and I have no intention of ever going back there. But I will say this. I believe something unnatural saved us that night, Houston. So Now, look, I laid this story down, folks, because we're going to have a lot of one-off stories in today's episode. Lots of just strange one-off stories. I cannot, for the life of me, come up with any idea of how you would crash through a gate and wreck a four-wheeler only to wake up right beside your truck, easily loaded up, nobody's hurt, nothing. Like, you have missing time, you have no idea, whatever's going on. Did this thing, is it a dog man? Is it a Bigfoot? Like, what is it? Did something else in these woods come out and rescue these guys? Whatever's happening.
Was Bigfoot or dog man carrying his rifle for 40 miles?
Then how does it know where you live? Like, can it just look at your tags? It was like, oh, did he look at your driver's license while you were unconscious? Like,
imagine coming across that. Can you imagine seeing a dog man walking with a rifle in its hands? I'd be like, I'm done in the outdoors.
It's like the old joke, it ain't no fun when the rabbit's got the gun. Yeah, that's whenever the fun, it gets serious when dog man's armed, right? That's always been the kicker. And you can see him. What is it? Black Rifle Coffee does that. There's a whole bunch of them. Tactisquatch, where it's Bigfoot with his nods and he's got his rifle and his plate carrier and all this stuff. I don't know. I don't know how to explain any of this. This is the part with the rifle being in his house. Like, it is. I'm at a loss for the whole thing, but I just thought it was a very interesting story.
It's very interesting. And I'm glad you brought up Bigfoot because I've got a story here for you.
Oh, all right.
This took place in 1985 in some old woods south of what is now the Meyer Nature Preserve near Martinsville, Indiana. And so this is where two brothers went squirrel hunting and came back with a memory they buried for decades. One of them believed with absolute certainty that he was about to be killed by something huge, intelligent, and not entirely animal.
Oh, this isn't good.
Lon Strickler sent this to me. He said that in 2020, he received a telephone call from a man who will refer to in this story as CC. He contacted Lon after the death of his brother, HC, because he felt the story had been kept silent long enough. So he was waiting for his brother to die before he would pass the story on. The encounter itself took place in 1985 during an autumn afternoon in an old-growth woodland area in central Indiana, just south of the Meyer Natural Preserve near Martinsville. Now, CC and his brother HC were out squirrel hunting, each one arriving in separate vehicles. As the light began to fade, CC decided to head back so he could get home before leaving for work that evening. Now, HC stayed behind in the timber, wanting a little more time in the woods. CC had not gone far when the calm shattered. Far behind him, back in the direction he had just left, he heard several shotgun blasts. Then came something worse, faint at first, but then unmistakable. Yelling, screaming, the kind of sound that makes the blood run cold because it carries panic. Believing his brother had been attacked or badly injured, CC turned and ran through the woods towards the gunfire. When he reached the spot, he found his brother, HC, sitting on the ground near a large boulder. Now, at first glance, there was no visible wounds, but that did not matter. The damage was written all over his face. He started downward in a fixed shock, pale and vacant position, like a man who'd seen something his mind could not process. So he knew something was wrong with his brother. CC tried to speak to him, and he got no response, for several minutes at least. HC seemed trapped inside himself, he claims. Finally, HC stirred slowly. He raised an arm and pointed towards a large oak tree that was nearby. Under his breath, barely able to force the words out, he muttered the same phrase more than once. Big ape. Big ape. He was trembling. CC poured him a cup of lukewarm coffee from a thermos, hoping the familiar act might steady him. Now, while HC drank, CC walked towards the tree. At its base, he noticed the leaves had been churned and disturbed. Freshly broken limbs lay scattered on the ground. Something had been there. And something had come down out of that tree. As HC became more coherent, his fear did not lessen. If anything, it sharpened. He got to his feet suddenly and began looking in every direction, frantic and exposed, expecting movements in the brush. It may come back, he said. It may come back, in a more hurried tone. Then he told his brother what happened. About 10 minutes after CC left, HC heard a sharp crack overhead, the explosive sound of a limb giving way. He looked up into the thick oak canopy and saw a large dark mass descending from the upper branches. Now, at first, it was only shape and motion, something immense sliding down the trunk of the tree with alarming speed, grunting deeply as it came. H.C. said he was frozen. He could not move. He believed that if he ran, whatever was above him would overtake him easily. Still not quite understanding what he was looking at, he raised his 12-gauge shotgun and thumbed off the safety. Then the thing came into view. It was not a bear. It was not any known animal. H.C. described it as a giant ape-like being, staring at him from the tree as it descended. Then he said it began to scream at him. The sound was not merely loud, it was aggressive. It was deliberate and full of rage. The creature continued downward until it reached a massive bow, roughly 15 feet above the ground. There it hung beneath the limb, pulling itself up and down while grunting and screaming, displaying both its size and its strength. H.C. estimated that while suspended from the branch, the creature stretched to nearly 12 feet in length. Then he noticed something that made the scene even more unnerving. Breasts. They swayed against the dark hair on its chest as it moved.
Hey-o!
In that instant, H.C. concluded that this thing, whatever it was female. By then, terror had fully taken over. H.C. later told his brother that he knew, in that moment, he was going to die. Despite the fact that he was loaded with number 6 shot, not ammunition suited for stopping something of that size, he fired twice into the creature. It dropped from the tree, but it did not collapse. It landed hard and solid on its feet. H.C. fired again. This time, the beast did not come at him. That may be the strangest detail at all. It simply stood there, some 50 feet away, quiet now, just looking at him. Not staggering, not screaming, not obviously injured, just watching him in a way that felt calculated and cold, he said. Then it turned and ran off into the opposite direction. When C.C. examined the area under the tree, he didn't find any blood. That detail stayed with both brothers. C.C. had officially accepted that what he had seen and had been told, he knew his brother wasn't a liar, like he believed him, even though it sounds crazy. The two men made a pact that day that they would never tell anyone. In fact, they barely spoke of it to one another afterwards. Neither ever returned to those woods. Only after H.C. died, C.C. decided the account needed to be told.
And you said this was in 85?
1985.
And it was right before C.C. released, or was actually the lead guitarist of their debut album, Look What the Cat Dragged In.
C.C. DeVille's out of
the name. Yeah, that's it, from Poison. Their first album dropped in 86. So,
well, yeah. What's interesting is in that area.
Talk dirty to me. So that's on there, yeah.
This account took place in Morgan County in Indiana. And if you go to the BFRO's website.
Was it a hot spot?
And you look in there, there were 3 other sightings that happened really near that area around the same time frame.
Ooh.
There was one sighting that took place in 1982. And then there was another one in like 96, and then another one like in 98. So it seemed like that, I wouldn't call it a hot spot.
But there's activity. But
they're not the only ones that saw something they couldn't quite describe.
Sweet.
So maybe that's a hot area.
12 foot, man. Good googly moogly. That thing's huge.
Man, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to get into some more stories. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
With Expanded Perspectives.
Hey-o.
Hope everybody out there is having a good week. Yeah, we got kind of a smorgasbord of strange stories, right? Yeah.
I've got one I'm going to hit you with because I know your brother's going to listen and I know how much he likes this. So. Okay,
so this has got to be a witch story or a flying humanoid.
There you go.
Two favorites.
There you go.
And when you go to Mexico, they're combined. So the flying humanoids are described as witches.
Yeah, so he's going to love this. Anderson sends this in. Lon forwarded over here to me because of where it is. This is what it starts off. I live in El Paso, Texas.
I'm sorry.
And back in 2007, I moved to the Lower Valley for about 7 months. I was 16 at the time, and I was still trying to figure myself out. And being the new kid made things rough, so I got bullied a lot. So then I started sneaking out at night and walking around the apartment complex just to clear my head. During those strange walks, I saw a lot of strange things. I would catch sight of a girl dressed in white. And at times I saw flashes of what looked like a man hanging from a tree. There were shadows, odd lights, and other things that I still cannot explain. Now, the unsettling part is, that I was not the only one seeing the strange activity there. See, there were other people in my family experiencing things also. But the one thing none of us have ever forgotten is the owls. About a week after we moved, my best friend wanted to spend the night so we could hang out before I left. He ended up feeling sick and decided to go home, so I walked him back. When I returned, I lay down on the couch and just stared at the closed curtains. There was a light outside the window, so whenever somebody passed by, their silhouette would show through. Well, as I lay there, I kept hearing what sounded like heavy wing flapping outside. I didn't think much of it at first, put on my earphones and listened to my iPod, and staring at the curtains out of boredom, and then I saw something that just stopped me cold. See, a huge bird flew past the window, and right in front of me, it turned into a woman. She stood there as if she knew I could see her. She didn't speak. She just stood there for a moment, and then she walked away. I could hear her footsteps fading into the empty stairwell outside of my apartment. I kept that to myself for a long time because I didn't want anybody to think that I had lost my mind. So 3 days before we moved out, I saw an owl perched in a tree just outside my window. I tried not to focus on it. I just went on with my usual night walk, and then the night before we left in El Paso, it happened again. This time, I saw the owl transform into a dark-skinned woman. But instead of stopping, she sprinted away. It looked like she was running from something, or as if she was terrified and trying to escape danger. I never went outside to investigate. I was still just a kid, and I was scared out of my mind. So about 4 months after we moved, my mother called all of us into the living room to talk. That conversation gave me my sanity back, and I finally knew I was not going crazy. My mother, brother, and I had all seen the same thing, only at different times and in different places. My brother said that while walking home from a friend's house, he saw an owl turn into a woman and run off into a field. My mother said she had experienced it several times while coming home from late night shifts. Sometimes she saw it at a distance and other times only a few feet away. I still want to know what we saw. I want to know whether anyone else has had encounters including owls or involving owls just like this, and whether these are all folk tales or legends or if there are any that might help explain it. So it sounds like La Chusa.
It's funny you bring this story up because just last night I was at my mother's house for her annual St. Patrick's Day party. And I was talking to my cousin's husband. His name's Casey and he was a Marine. And when he was serving over there, he said he had a female Marine that was part Native American. And she would get freaked out every time they saw owls because she said that they were skinwalkers. It's so funny because it sounds a lot like your story.
Well, and ever since we started covering the stuff with Mike Clellan way back in the day, talking about owls and move through it, it almost seems like there is something to it, right? Like if you think about owls in a supernatural realm, we always hear them about either they look like aliens. We get them to where there's big owls. Now we get them with this kind of stuff. If you look at any of account in like modern just entertainment, if you look at Owls. Like, they're always involved. They're way smarter than everything else, because we were always raised to believe, like, Owls mean they're wise. Everything is wise, right? And you don't really know why.
Even the Wise Potato Chip Company, their logo is an owl.
Owl. And you think about, like, is it Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pops, right? The owl. That. Like, all of it. So I don't know, but it kind of makes sense to think, like, oh, yeah, maybe they are just skinwalkers. But I don't understand why they were transforming, unless they were doing and running off trying to pull you to follow.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know.
Not having questioned the person, but I wonder if every time she sees an owl, she thinks it's a skinwalker, or can she look at him and tell, like, that one's not really an owl?
That would have been a good question to ask. Like, what do you look for? What do you look for is details. Like, we talk about not deer. Is it not owl? Is there a not owl detail that I need to look for to know whether that's a cool one? Because I've seen a bunch. Out at our deer lease, there's a bunch.
I've had one try to get in a box blind while I was sitting in it.
Yeah.
Talk about scared.
And they're awesome. I love owls.
Oh, I do.
But I also would like to know a heads up. Is there certain ones I need to look out for?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, it's an unsettling thing.
You know what we need to do when we go to Scarborough Fair? We need to go to the Falcon Show and ask the guy, because he's got a couple owls.
Yeah, yeah. And I told you that I talked to him the last time we went. Well, first time.
I don't remember that.
So when we went and took the granddaughter, this has been like 4 or 5 years, because we go every year.
Does she like it?
Oh, she loves
it. All the pageantry and stuff.
She loves it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She gets dressed up now. We're actually going in a few weeks.
You need like an iron worker. You need an outfit that looks like that. You'd be perfect for
what I wanted to do is I want to make like foam armor to look like dwarven armor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I fit the part of the whole thing.
So you look like Gimli.
But
you're an actual iron worker. So
this
like,
is true.
The look is copying the profession.
Right. I spoke to the old falconer guy there, because there's a lot of other people, and he's the same one that was there. I think I've told y'all this. He's the same one that was there when we went in junior high. It's the same guy. Because I went up and asked him, how long have you been doing this? And he told me, and I'm like, I thought so. And he was like, why? And then I told him, I'm like, dude, I saw you as when I was a kid. And he doesn't even stand anymore. Like, he walks around, but he has to, like, he's an older fella. Like, if I'm betting late 70s, maybe early 80s.
100%. Yeah.
He's probably forgotten more about raising, you know, birds of prey and all this than anybody else I can imagine even
knows. Falconry is one skill that requires total dedication like that. Like,
an apprenticeship.
You have to dedicate your life to it.
You're going
to
be an apprentice, and you're going to dedicate your life to the birds in order to even move up, because you can't go to the top. You only get a certain bird at a certain level, and that's all by law you're allowed to have, I believe. And you have to work your way up like you do in any other, like, in any kind of trade, right? You're only allowed to do this and this and this till you show that you know enough to do it.
I was watching, I don't know if it was Nova or something like that on PBS, and it was showing falconry, and it was showing how these like three people that were following their career like that. And there was people that were wanting to take on apprenticeships doing it. And even the master guys are like, no, you're going to have to prove yourself, because like, this isn't something you just try out for a couple weeks.
Yeah, you don't just get to turn this pet back in or do something like that.
Like, it's a huge commitment. Like,
and I don't
know.
Those
birds live like 25 years.
Well, and I don't know, but I wonder, surely like they imprint. I would think at a certain, you know what I'm saying? Like, they become your bird. And, you know, you're their handler, and it's one of those things kind of like a canine officer with their dogs, right? When you start dealing with that, it's like, that's your dog.
I want to know how the Mongolians invented that. Like, who was the guy that was like, you know what? I can't ever shoot this bow very good.
So I'm going to get that giant falcon.
I'm going to get that hawk up there to do the work for me.
And they ride small horses and carry big birds.
Yeah.
It's really strange to me to see them on those small horses.
It's amazing just, to watch it.
Dude, it's awesome. It's awesome.
I wish they had that. Like, I know they do the bird display.
Yeah.
And they fly around. But I mean, I wish you could go somewhere and watch them hunt rabbits. That would be awesome.
Oh, that would be fun. That would be fun to go actually be in the field.
Like, you could pay money to go on a dog sledding thing.
To go with those guys when they go hunt.
And they take you on horseback and you go out there and you get to watch them hunt.
I would like to take them pheasant hunting.
Oh, yeah.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. All right. I got another one here for you.
Lay it on me, bro.
Moving on. It says, hey, hello, gentlemen. I was 9 years old the first time I woke up and realized something was in my room.
Uh-oh.
Our house was quiet at night. Not the peaceful kind of quiet. The kind where every creak and shift of the walls sounds way louder than it should. My bedroom sat at the end of a short hallway. And once the lights were off, it felt like the rest of the house simply disappeared. That night, I woke suddenly. No dream. No noise, just that strange feeling that pulled me out of sleep like someone had whispered my name. For a moment, I lay still, just staring at the ceiling. Then I realized the room didn't feel empty. A weak orange glow from a distant streetlight slipped through the blinds and stretched those thin lines across the floor. It was just enough light to make out the shapes in my room. My dresser, my desk, the door, and the corner. That's where I saw it. At first, my mind tried to explain it away. "Oh, it's just a pile of clothes," I said. "A trick of the shadows. The outline of something I'd left there earlier." But the longer I stared, the more wrong it looked. The shape was too tall. It stretched from the floor nearly to the ceiling, thin and narrow, like a person standing with their shoulders hunched forward. And it was darker, darker than everything else in the room. Not shadow dark, something deeper, like the darkness there had physical weight. I stared at it, my eyes slowly adjusting, my brain trying to keep to fix it into something normal. Maybe a coat hanging from the wall, maybe the curtain pulled the wrong way. But we didn't have anything in that corner. Nothing that tall, nothing that thin, and nothing that should have been moving. Because slowly, almost carefully, the shape I could tell leaned forward. My stomach dropped. It looked like someone was shifting their balance after standing still for a long time. I didn't scream. I didn't move because I couldn't. I felt like if I made a sound, it would know that I was awake. And somehow, I felt like it already knew. Seconds, they stretched into minutes as I stared at the thing in the corner. My eyes started watering because of me not blinking. Then something else began to take shape. Two faint points in the darkness. They weren't glowing, but they reflected the dim streetlight just enough to reveal where they were. Eyes. Too high up. Too still. Watching me. My breathing turned shallow. My chest barely moved. The thing leaned forward again. Slowly. Just a few inches closer. Like it was, I don't know, studying me. Like it had been waiting for me to wake up. I don't know how long I lay there, before I realized that the lamp beside my bed was within reach. But reaching for it felt like the most dangerous thing I'd ever done. If I moved, it might move too. If I turned on the light, it might not be gone. My hand crept across the mattress, slowly. Every inch felt like it took forever. Then, the shape in the corner, well, it didn't move again, but the eyes followed my hand. I was sure of it. Finally, my fingers brushed the lamp switch. For one moment, I hesitated, because some part of me had a terrible thought. What if the light didn't make it disappear? I flipped the switch. The lamp flared to life. The corner was empty. Nothing there. No coat, no object, no shadow shaped like a person, just a bare wall. But even now, years later, there's one thing I can't stop thinking about. Because when the light came on, I could swear the thing in the corner had been closer than when I first saw it. Wow. That's a terrifying shadow person sighting, right?
I hate shadow sightings.
Yeah, I know. We did that episode a couple weeks ago, and since then we've gotten a handful more stories. So might have to start collecting those, too. We might just be doing Glimmer Man books.
Shadow
Man books.
Yeah, exactly. I've got one that's not, we've talked about this in the past, and I think I've covered it. It's been a while back, but I got one here. Peyton posted this up. I think it takes place in the Virginia, D.C. area, but this says, I was walking a trail by woods and a creek one day with my pup.
Yeah.
I said, this pup's oblivious to everything. Says, suddenly I saw what looked like a man, only 18 to 24 inches tall and made completely out of twigs, start to cross in the path in front of me. Said that it suddenly shot upwards into the trees and it just was gone. He said, now, he wasn't what you would think of as a gnome. He didn't have any real heft to his body, any clothing, anything like that. It was just twigs, like the trunk, and twigs for arms and legs. Said all this happened so quick I didn't get to see its face, but that's what I saw. That basically 18-inch stick man walk out into the field or into the path,
yeah.
sees them, and then shoots up into the trees and vanishes. So I've often wondered now, is that a gnome sighting? Or is it a regular stick man sighting?
Or like a nature spirit or something?
Yeah, exactly.
What are the walking trees like in the Lord of the Rings?
The Ents.
Yeah,
the Ents. Like the tree Ents? Yeah, isn't that what it was?
Maybe that was just a juvenile.
Yeah, yeah, maybe it was. So that one led me to one here, okay? I believe it's Iris says, hi guys, I wanted to share a story with y'all describing what I saw around 20 years ago. It was a hot midsummer evening, and I went for an evening run. I was in my early 20s, and this had been my routine for a long time. Three sprint sessions and two mid-distant runs per week. Nothing unusual. That's unusual. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. That day, I switched paths and decided to take a route alongside some fields after passing the cemetery. So I started at a slow pace so that I could increase it later. Suddenly, 10 to 15 meters in front of me, I saw a creature run across my path from one wheat field to another on the opposite side. And I was so shocked, I just turned and ran away. But what I saw was a humanoid creature about 1 to 1.5 meters tall. Its face and head was a fox or a jackal or kangaroo-like. The running pattern was very human. It was an erect, straight posture with leg movements close to ours, but it kept its arms in front of it like a dinosaur in the movies. The arm movement was blurry in my memory, so I'm not 100% sure about that part. I've tried to explain it to myself for years and thought maybe it was some diseased or mutated animal, but the more I've thought about it and the more I've thought about the way it moved, well, the more certain I've become that it wasn't an animal. See, I can't recall if it was wearing anything because it all happened too quickly, and I was also afraid to talk about this because I thought no one would believe me. Has anyone out there experienced anything like this? Is it in mythology? It was closest looking to Anubis, but with a brownish-gray skin and fur color.
Mm.
So what could that have been? Anubis, like a jackal man. Running around in the woods.
Yeah.
A 3 foot tall, 3.5 foot tall jackal man.
And maybe it was a skinwalker. Like, let me ask you this. Yeah, if you're a skinwalker, do you get to choose what animal? Like, you'd be like, nah, man, I want to be a jackal. And this guy's like, nah, dude, I want to be a platypus. And this guy's like, nah, man.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I want to be an owl. Well, or does it just depend on your mentor? Like, listen, all I know how to turn into, sorry, is a burrow.
All I can teach you, yeah, is to be a little donkey, a little Jerusalem-style donkey. That's all I can teach you how to be. That's a good question because it also makes you wonder, are there skinwalkers in other countries? Is it only in North America due to the Native American beliefs and all that?
I doubt it because like a lot of the werewolf, like the early werewolf stories come from like France and Germany.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're skinwalkers. Like what we know is skinwalkers.
See, that's
so
where
makes me wonder.
I always say that like a person turning into a werewolf.
Is a werewolf.
Is the same as a skinwalker though, really. What's the difference?
I understand where you're going with this, but it doesn't follow the lineage of skinwalkers. No. It's just, because by that matter, then that means a butterfly is a skinwalker because it used to be a caterpillar, but it can't go back to being a caterpillar like a werewolf can. See, now we're getting into the weeds on this whole thing.
I know, right?
Because
there's
when you brought up
clear-cut answers.
No, because when you brought up, well, if there, do you get to pick? Well, I'm like, well, what if you only know how to change into one thing, but it's only an animal in North America, and now you find yourself, I don't know, pick another country that doesn't belong, and you see it, it stands out even more.
What if you want to turn into something, like I want to turn into a brown trout. I want to go in the, I want aquatic life, baby.
Why not?
Is there a depressed skinwalker out there that's really bummed out because all he can turn into is a toad?
I would imagine there's a lot of depressed skinwalkers out there. Like that would be what I would get stuck with, was just being a toad.
My life would be so much better if I could shapeshift into a dolphin.
If you could just be a toad. I've got one because of the headline alone, so I'm going to read this to y'all. Kyle, you're going to love this. This incident took place in October of 1976.
Nice.
You were just a wee fella.
Yeah.
Oh, wee one right there. He couldn't even hold his head up on his own in October of 76. Still pooping.
I was like 2 months
color.
Old.
Yeah. Four men were searching for turquoise in a turquoise vein in Kelvin, Arizona, when suddenly the group noticed the desert floor move silently across the sky, only to reveal a strange craft that had camouflaged itself descending upon the desert floor. Mm. When it landed, a ramp came out of it, and out came two seemingly human men who wore t-shirts and shorts, stepped out first before two women, and three children stepped off the UFO as well.
What?
The men brought down what looked like a barbecue grill from the object, while the women took out what resembled a cooler. And the men proceeded to go back inside, set up a whole table and metallic chairs for them to dine on. The children got toys that they played with, all while out of the craft, as well as the women went back inside again to get food for the occasion, going to in and out, in and out. If this wasn't all peculiar enough, one of the men walked towards the witness and asked what they were doing. And when the men responded they were searching for turquoise, the being replied saying he would never understand human fascination with rocks and walked back towards the rest of the group. When the entities were done with what they were doing, they picked everything up, waved goodbye to the four men before they departed. Yeah. The analysis to this little encounter was that one of the weirdest encounters ever.
Yeah.
Right? And that they don't know this. And this is what they're throwing out. That's all they've reported. Is I don't know how long it took. They don't talk about how long these men were hunting turquoise, that they didn't run. They didn't. They just kind of hung out and witnessed all this. They bring up some good questions. Was this some form of alien hybrid thing? Were these the alien-human hybrids, and now they're like forced to be together because they're not accepted by the alien race? They're not accepted by the human race. They have their own group. They have their That's own families. Point. They put it all. They all look basically human. Aside from a few things that they can travel through space, were they time travelers? Have come back in time like you and I have talked about how much fun it would be just to go back in time in a UFO and just land and check it out and all, and then get back in and leave again? Or was it some sort of military operation? And if it's a military operation, well, who okayed the cookout with the kids flying around on a government craft?
Yeah, and the guy even said, I don't ever understand you humans.
Yeah, I don't ever understand humans' fascination with rocks.
Meaning that they are not human.
Or they're just being a smartass. One of the two, I don't know which.
That's crazy. They just pull over in our barbecue.
Just land in the middle of a desert in Arizona to barbecue.
I'd like to try some alien barbecue. You know what?
I would too.
Now that you're saying this, this isn't the only time.
Nope.
I've heard of something similar. I've heard of something crazy like this. There's a story in one of Joshua Cutchin's books. I believe it's The Brimstone Deceit, or I believe it is, where there was a farmer, an old man, and like a UFO landed, and these extraterrestrials looking human-like made him like these bizarre pancakes. He said they were like flavorless and weird.
Yeah.
So it's a similar thing. They came down and made him pancakes. These guys are making barbecue pulled pork sandwiches.
They're making sandwiches. When I think about them being in the desert, I think about the one where the people had seen it land and they watched them get out and start like checking rocks, like scavenging dirt and rocks and like running it. They would put it in some device they had, like they were scanning it for something and dump it out till they were finding. And when they noticed they were being watched, they turned around and noticed those dudes on the ridge. They panicked, run, jumped back in the thing and took off.
We know now that they don't like turquoise.
Yeah, apparently they don't. They don't want to be part of the Navajo Nation, and that's a shame on them.
Yeah, you can go around here. There's turquoise in all the shops, man.
Well, because we have, and I'm not don't mean to brag, but we actually have one of the best Native American turquoise artists in the United States right here in town, and he's actually a really good friend of mine. You can go online and check him out. His name's Garen Steele. It's Big Chief. So if you want to look up Chief or any of that stuff, Chief's Trading and all that, you can go on Instagram. You can see all that. I've known Garen his whole life, and he is an amazing silversmith. He makes handmade jewelry.
Is that the Chief Trading on York Street?
That's his
spot. I've never been in there.
Yeah, it's if you want to go see like top tier, amazing custom jewelry, like you need to go down there and just go check out what Garen builds. I tell you, it's so big that I think he who was it? Was it Ralph Lauren he had to go meet? I think it was Ralph Lauren that collects all the Navajo belts and all stuff. So he had to go to, he went out to Beverly Hills, and I think it was Ralph that he went and met with and took an order from him and all this stuff and all that. I believe what's going down. But yeah, like a lot of Garen stuff you'll see in all kinds of television shows people have. And all, I mean, like, it's a big deal. So like if you're into that, and I am, go check it out, because Garen's an amazing artist.
That's cool.
I need to ask him about some of this stuff, of what he may have known from the people that he buys from, because it's all like the way he gets it. Because there's certain ways you have to acquire it, and the way, you know, where it's not stolen or whatever it is, the way they do it, so where he finds it. But I need to ask him about some of this stuff. I need to drop in there and see what he's got going on.
I got a creepy one I want to tell you before we hit the break.
They're all creepy.
Yeah, listen to this. When I was growing up, our house had a hallway that felt wrong after midnight.
Hey, we all had a hallway, bro.
Did they all feel wrong after
they
midnight?
They all felt then? Wrong. Mine did, because I was like bouncing off the wall side. You fall down in it. I stepped on Kyle in one.
It was long and narrow, with bedrooms lining one side and a blank wall on the other. Now, during the day, it looked perfectly normal. At night, though, it felt more like a tunnel.
I grew up in the same thing. It was a single-wide trailer house. Right? I lived in one when I was a kid, too. Yeah, I understand what you're going through. I get it.
The only light that came from the kitchen was from the kitchen on the far end. When the hallway lights were off, shadows stretched across the floor like dark water. My bedroom door opened halfway down the hall. When I was about 11, I started hearing something at night. Couldn't tell what it was. At first, it was just faint noises. Soft, scraping sounds. Almost like something was dragging something across the floor. I assumed it was just the house settling, or maybe a loose vent shifting when the air conditioner turned on. But one night, I woke up and I heard it clearly. A scratching sound. A long, slow drag across the wooden floor. Then silence. Then more scratching. I sat up in bed and listened intently. It was coming from the hallway. My parents were asleep on the other side of the house. My young brother's room was across from mine, but his door was closed and his light was off. The scratching sound came again, closer this time. Well, curiosity got the better of me. I slipped out of bed and walked to my door, very quiet. Careful not to make any noise. The hallway beyond it was dark except for the dim glow from the kitchen. I opened the door slowly and quietly, just enough to peek out. At first, I saw nothing. The hallway was empty. Then, something moved at the far end. A shape shifted low to the ground. My brain tried to understand what I was looking at. It looked like it was someone crawling. But the way it moved was all wrong. Its limbs bent strangely. Elbows and knees angled too sharply. Its body stayed unnaturally close to the floor as it dragged itself forward. Then I heard scratching again. Its hand scraped across the wooden floor. The sound echoed softly through the hallway. I felt my skin go cold. The thing crawled slowly towards my room. Each movement was stiff and uneven, like a puppet being pulled by invisible strings.
Mm-mm.
It didn't look like a person crawling. It looked like something trying to remember how people move. That's the only way I can describe it.
I don't like this.
It was scratching and slowly getting closer. The dim kitchen light caught the side of its face for just a second, and I wished it hadn't, because the head tilted too far to one side, and the eyes were wide open, too wide, staring straight down the hallway, toward me. I froze in the doorway. The thing kept crawling until it reached the darker part of the hallway near my room.
That's when the shotgun went off.
Then it stopped. Its head turned slowly. I swear I could hear the faint crack of something shifting its neck as it rotated. It looked directly at me, and for a moment, neither of us moved. The silence pressed in from every side. Then the thing began backing away. Not turning around, mind you. Not breaking eye contact. It just dragged itself backward down the hallway, scratching the entire time it was doing it. Its hands pulled across the floor as it retreated into the deeper darkness. Eventually, the hallway was empty again. The scratching had stopped. But I didn't move. I stood in that doorway for a long time, because every time I thought I couldn't see it anymore, I had the horrible feeling that it was still somewhere in the house, waiting patiently for me to fall asleep again. Thanks for all you do.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
Dude, start turning on lights.
Yeah, dude. I have my light blind.
You're going to have to go in there.
You're going to have to move.
You're going
to
need.
I know you're a child, but you need to go talk to your parents.
You're going
to
need to tell your parents you need it doesn't have to be an automatic, but you need to get a 12-gauge shotgun and a crucifix and wade off into the middle of that thing, letting her rip. I want that shotgun from Constantine, right? That's the one I want to shoot these things with.
I want the one that Randy Couture, is that who's using it? And what's the movie with all the Sylvester Stallone, all the
Expendables.
Remember he's got that fully
automatic. Is it Randy or is it Terry Crews?
It's like a USAS-12. That's what I want.
My brother almost got one.
There's some reason I believe that.
I need to shoot one of those. Yeah, dude, I would panic. What could that have been? Because you're hearing physical sounds of it.
To me, and it seems like a lot of children have these signs. I think it's something demonic that likes to prey on children. Like, it just does it to scare them.
Yeah, because
it feeds off your fear.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like.
It's what it feels like.
In all seriousness, I don't think a shotgun is going to help you.
Probably not.
But the crucifix angle might. I would get a priest to come bless your house.
All jokes aside, yeah, that's probably the best thing.
And then get maybe
whatever, you know what? I would
be the house, all kinds of things.
If I had something like that happen in my house, I would be just like Benny on The Mummy. And I would have so many holy men through this place blessing. I mean, I would try every religion.
I got Father Basil. I got him on my phone.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm lining my house with icons. Like, I'm going to have Theotokos ones.
That whole
here.
Hallway, oh, right?
Yeah. All the
you're
saints.
Just like, bro.
I'm going to have holy water.
I'm going to do everything in religious wise. I'm going to do everything with salt and sage. I'm doing everything. I don't want nothing in my place.
Imagine just getting up for some milk and cookies in the middle of the night. You see that in the hallway.
Stumbling down the hall. Imagine coming in late from D&D. You're all spun up on Fun Dip because Jim likes to bring Fun Dip. So we're all hopped up on Fun Dip. And you come in late at night, and then this thing's in the hallway.
Yeah.
Then you evacuate right there in front of him, whatever this thing is. And now you have to explain to your family why you evacuated all in your pants.
Yeah, and then you get in trouble.
Then you're in trouble, and you can't tell them you saw something scary. Speaking of something scary, I got one more.
Let's take a break first. And we get
back
you
want
the
me
break.
To bring it? Oh, he's teasing, folks. He's hit y'all with a teaser, leaving you on a cliffy.
Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Back from the cliffy. I got one more I have to hit you with. This isn't so much, well, I don't know. I'll leave it up to you. I think you're going to like this. This is, well, first of all, you're going to like this because it took place in Poland. And what makes it funny is there's no way I can pronounce some of this stuff. So we're just going to leave it at that. But it says, I want to share a story. Joe sent this. I want to share a story that happened to my grandfather. It took place in Poland. And there's a whole lot of letters here that I'm not sure how the Polish pronounce them. So we're just going to move on the way down till I get to the very end. It took place in this place in Poland, in the forest, on the outskirts of the town, Golub Dobrince.
Okay, sounds good.
It happened in the evening of either the last days of June or the first week of July in 1977. My grandfather took his guard dog, a medium-sized mutt, for an evening walk through the nearby forest. What's important to note is that there was a net of old derelict trenches from the World War in that forest. So he was walking. The dog stopped about 10 meters or so from one of those trenches and turned and faced it. When Grandpa faced that direction, he saw a man walk out of the trench. The dog started growling, and that alerted the stranger, causing him to face them. Grandpa described the man as young, about somewhere in the early 20s at most, with a tall, rather lean build, a mane of dark, curly, wavy hair, a goatee, and wide golden eyes. Grandpa said the stranger's eyes weren't light brown, but specifically the color of molten gold, or what he thought the molten gold would look like. The stranger was wearing a dark, wide-brimmed hat adorned with feathers, a green cloak with the pattern of leaves, dark jack boots, and dark, heavy gauntlets. When they both saw each other, they both froze, looking with surprise at one another. After a moment, Grandpa remembered that there was to be a reenactment of nightly tournament at the city's castle. They're still done there yearly, but back then it would have been the first one and thus quite a novelty. Grandpa asked the stranger if perhaps he was there for the tournament and got lost in the forest. Still surprised, the stranger answered in some foreign language that definitely wasn't German or English from what Grandpa was trying to convey. He said that it sounded like one of the Romance languages. Knowing only Polish, Russian, and a bit of German. I like how he says knowing only.
Yeah.
Has anybody out there ever even just taken the chance to look at the Russian alphabet? Good luck. Said it left them unable to communicate. After another moment, the stranger pointed at the dog, which was still growling, and asked something. Before Grandpa managed to say anything, the dog broke loose of the leash and started chasing the stranger. In an instant, the stranger raised his hand and pointed his finger at the dog. From beneath the stranger flashed a burst of purple light, and a deafening bang could be heard, like a huge firework. The dog instantly turned and ran away, yelping. The stranger now looked at Grandpa with what he described was a mix of disappointment and guilt. The stranger didn't say anything else. He flicked his wrist on his outstretched hand. The purple light flashed once again, and the stranger disappeared with a gust of sudden wind, leaving no trace of his existence. Grandpa didn't think twice. He turned back and ran back home. When he got there, the dog was already there waiting for him by the gate. Now, Grandpa wouldn't walk the dog near the trenches until the end of the summer. This would be the first time he had seen that stranger, the Hat Man, or the Wizard, as Grandpa called him. So, what on earth could that have been?
A wizard.
A wizard.
I'd like to meet a real wizard.
Like a real wizard. So, I mean, like, when you describe, it sounds like a druid. Like, he just showed up the way he's dressed, the way he comes out, a hat with feathers and all this stuff, and walks up out of an old trench littered through the forest from World War II. And maybe one.
Probably both.
And pops up out of there. At first, when I first found the story and was reading over it, I'm like, are we talking time slip? Is this what we're fixing to get into? It is nothing like that. It's just like this dude appeared out of a portal.
Are you Merlin?
Yeah.
Merlin?
Right? Are you Mordenkainen? Like, what is happening here? So, yeah, I have no idea what that is. Like I said, one-off stories. There's no way to ever explain that. There's no way to ever chase that down.
No.
So I have no idea.
That is
some more wild ones.
A wild story. I've got one more.
Oh, lay it on me.
Before we get out of here, this comes from a listener. Hold on. Let me find it real quick.
Dig it out of there. Stop already.
It says, hello, I'm Jade, and I've been listening to you guys for a couple years now, and I just want to thank you for giving people a safe place to share their stories.
Thank you, Jade.
I've never really shared mine out of fear of judgment, but I feel like I really need to just get this off my chest. I don't expect you to read this on your show, but just to be heard is enough for me. My grandparents owned a hotel in Cornwall, England.
Ooh.
I don't remember this sighting myself, but my mom remembers my reaction like it was yesterday. When I was 1 year old, I was upstairs in the hotel playing with my dolls 1 minute and then running down the stairs crying and screaming like I just saw death itself. I told my mom that I saw a scary shadow man who wore a top hat and a cloak and had rips and holes in it. He had a pointy nose, a pointy chin, and when he opened his mouth, he had a long, thin, snake-like tongue that rattled between its pointy teeth.
Mm-mm.
Fast forward a couple of years, and I'm 8 years old now. Now, this one I remember. There's this church in St. Colum Major. It was built in 1433, so you can imagine how creepy this church was for an 8 year old. Not creepy enough to stop me from wandering off in the church, though. It has this huge bell tower with a big spiral staircase leading up to the bell, up to the top. At this age, I wanted to be a princess when I grew up. So this was my playground. That bell tower was my key to becoming Rapunzel. I snuck off, and as I started climbing the staircase, I reached halfway and stopped in my tracks. The bell starts ringing, and I'm standing face to face with my top hat shadow man. This time he has a cane He taps his cane on the step, and out comes this rattling snake-like tongue. I ran screaming and crying as I did the first time. Again, a couple of years pass and I don't see him for a while. He keeps coming to me in my nightmares. At age 14, I start getting sleep paralysis at first. It was just this overwhelming fear and being so frozen that I couldn't move. I didn't see any dark figures or faces, but I could sense him watching me, lurking in the dark somewhere. And you know, when you think you see a shadow or something moving out of the corner of your eye, then you start looking and there's nothing there. You shake it off and think that you're just imagining things. I was getting that for quite a while, until one night. When I looked, while I was laying in the top bunk of my bed, my little sister asleep below me, he was standing there, at the wall, at the front of foot of my bed. But then this time, he didn't tap his cane or rattle his tongue. He walked to the corner, diagonal to me, across the wall to the other corner, and then into my closet. I screamed, in my bed, under my blanket, until my mom woke up, came running into my room. I feel very thankful that my mom believed me instead of telling me that I was crazy. But when I grew older and I turned 20, my mom told me that why she believes me. She told me there's been this darkness that haunts our family since before she was even born. My grandma used to play around with Ouija boards in her youth and had an experience so bad that she literally took it to her grave. Now, no one knows what happened to her that night, but ever since, she's felt this curse. I once overheard my grandfather telling my mom about how my grandma sleep talks in a voice and language that isn't hers. He said it sounds almost demonic. My mom then told me that the shadow man has been haunting me and used to also haunt my uncle. I wish I knew what happened with my grandma's Ouija board experience so our family could understand. But every time someone brought it up around her, she'd choke up and tell us to never mention that around her again. She was consumed by the fear, and it broke my heart. I'm 24 now, and I've moved to Canada. I haven't seen my shadow man since I was 16, but I don't think he's gone yet. I still feel him watching me. He's still in the corner of my eye.
Mm-mm.
JD, well, thank you for sending that in, first of all. Yeah, man, I told you, we've been getting more shadow man stories since we did that episode. And I don't know what it is. And I feel
shadow man usually only lives in places that win gold medals in hockey. So you're safe. I had to do it. I'm sorry, Canadian listeners. Okay. I did it just to mess with Kyle. I don't watch enough hockey to have any skin in the game, but I love to watch him get all fired up. So yeah, I knew I'd get a laugh. No, you don't. Just stop lying.
I feel terrible for the people that are plagued by this, though.
The shadow man.
Yeah,
dude. It's the one. Look, like we always talk about, I really do not like that.
I don't either
at all. Like, it's the one thing that I'm like, bro, you're going to have to go to sleep. Right, it's kind of like the ideal written of Krueger, Freddy Krueger. Like the idea, yeah. To me, Shadow Man that's the kind of the same thing.
Yeah, like, it's probably inspired by.
You're going to eventually be in the shadows. Eventually, it will always happen.
Yeah,
right. That, you know what? That's a twist on the movie to where like a dude gets so freaked out or something where their whole house is lit and there's never any shadows until there is.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like any of it. The Shadow Man stuff is a big no from me, dog. That's a no from me.
I agree. If you have any stories you'd like to share with Cam and I and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Word.
You can call the hotline 888-393-2783. Don't forget about The Glimmer Man, our book.
You can also listen to a little interview we did with our homie Derek.
That's right.
On Monsters Among Us.
We were just with Derek Hayes and for the Monsters
There's Among more Us. Of those coming up too.
If you want to get yourself a copy of The Glimmer Man, go over there and buy it on Amazon. Please leave us a nice review. And if you want a signed copy, reach out to us. You can send us an email. It's probably the easiest way. As soon as the publisher ships them, I mean, they're supposed to be here any minute. As soon as they get here,
we'll start rocking and rolling with
that whole deal. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsor. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Get started with Claude today. That's Claude.ai/expanded. That's Claude.ai/expanded. And check out Claude Pro,
word,
which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week? Hopefully this wind slows down.
The wind hopefully slows down a little bit. Going to get to keep the granddaughter during spring break. Her and I have got some more fun. And hopefully, for those that don't know, my son had an accident. He's doing better. We're trying to get him even more to you. It was a pretty significant head injury. But he's doing great. Went and saw him today. He's home. All of that stuff. So got to go a few more doctor stuff. Get all that going so I can get him back in action.
He's probably going stir crazy.
He is. Yeah, he's feeling better. It only hurts at the spot where it fractured the skull and all that stuff. So that, but yeah, his jaw's lined back up again. He's still having trouble in one of his eyes and stuff like that. So hopefully it'll get going again. So he'll be fine. He'll shake it off. It's just going to take a while.
All right, folks, that's all we have for this episode. Till next time, be careful. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.